Hi, everyone. Ethical lapses are often chalked up to rogue employees who might just be bad people. But is it ever really that simple? Recent scholarship suggests otherwise. I'm your host, Bill Coffin, and this is the Ethicast. In the recently published book, Research Handbook on Organizational Integrity, Harvard Business School professor Lynn S. Payne revisits the research she began in the 1990s that challenges the notion that ethical lapses within organizations are purely the result of rogue employees or simply people with low character. She notes that in many cases, ethical lapses were largely the result of managers setting unrealistic expectations, which led otherwise decent people to take unethical shortcuts. It's something she speaks to directly in a recent Harvard Business Review article, "When Managers Set Unrealistic Expectations, Employees Cut Ethical Corners." With us today to talk about Professor Payne's conclusions is Erica Salmon Byrne, Chief Strategy Officer for Ethisphere and Executive Chair of the Business Ethics Leadership Alliance. Erica, it's great to have you back on the show.
Bill, thank you so much for having me back. I was so excited to see Professor Payne's article post and really wanted the chance to talk about this because a lot of the points she's making are things that we see in the culture work that we do here at Ethisphere every day. And given the fact that our spring Ethisphere magazine edition is culture focused, I thought it was an incredibly timely opportunity for us to talk a little bit about how pernicious pressure can be.
Absolutely. Well, Professor Payne's article points out numerous ways how really bad management decisions ask the impossible of employees and incentivize people in the wrong ways. When we talk about Ethisphere's own eight pillars of ethical culture, one of those pillars is pressure. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about Payne's conclusions and how they make you think about the ways in which organizations need to prioritize pressure as a key element of their own cultures of integrity?
Professor Payne makes the point that often what ends up happening in these situations is a well-meaning employee who is facing simply impossible objectives cuts corners to be able to achieve those objectives. And that's exactly what we measure with the pressure pillar in the culture work that we do. And what that pillar has shown us over the years is about a quarter of our data set reports feeling some level of pressure to compromise company objectives at any given point. And the top three sources of that pressure for most organizations are senior leadership, so sort of the on-high setting of objectives, middle managers, the specific business unit level setting of those objectives, and immediate manager, the person who's being measured on whether or not those objectives can be achieved or not. And that's part of the reason why, when we look at the DOJ's guidance, you know, the evaluation of corporate compliance programs also talks about whether or not you have evaluated your company objectives for the extent to which they are setting people up for either failure or ethical lapses.
At the Global Ethics Summit, you had a terrific conversation with Matt Galvin of the Department of Justice. And in that, he defined culture as the worst behavior an organization will tolerate. Yeah. And that reinforces Professor Payne's notion that ethical lapses are at least as much one's reaction to their environment as it is a reflection of their own personal values. But I have to wonder if Galvin's definition of ethics might also be a product of his own professional environment. I mean, after all, he doesn't get called in to look at organizations where the culture is working well, right? So I'm wondering if you could speak to all this. And most importantly, how can organizations transition from living by a lowest common denominator of what behavior they'll tolerate to a highest common denominator of what ethical behavior they should strive for? Or are those both just two sides of the same ethical coin?
I think in some ways they're two sides of the same ethical coin, Bill. But I really liked Matt's definition of culture that he shared during that conversation that I was fortunate enough to have with him at the summit. You know, this concept that culture is really the worst behavior you will tolerate. And it goes to the risk mitigation aspect of it, right? It goes to, you know, what will you allow to exist day to day in your organization? And what does that do to the day to day decision making of the people who are tasked with achieving the objectives that have been set out for that particular individual company? Or, you know, really it applies to any kind of organization. It doesn't have to be a company, but, you know, the work that we do is most often measuring with companies. And so one of the things that we talk to organizations a lot about when we present on those pressure numbers that I mentioned is more often than not, the pressure is a sin of omission, not commission, right? Mm-hmm. So it is very unusual to find a senior leader that is saying, these are impossible sales targets and I don't care what you have to do to hit them, right? You know, that is generally speaking, that last part is not the message. But at the same time, we often don't see leadership saying, these are really challenging sales targets. And if you can't hit them without bending our values or compromising our integrity, come talk to me so that we can prioritize how we're going to address that together.
Yeah.
More often than not, what we have is silence. Here are our targets. Let's go, team. And they count on other people to carry the water of, and it matters how you do it. And if you, you know, if you're going to do it, if you can't do it without bending our rules, you know, come talk to me. They count on the compliance team to say that. They count on the HR team to say that, right? That is somebody else's message to carry. And so what the individual employee hears is, well, these are my goals. These are my goals. Mm-hmm. And that's all that matters. And then the compliance team saying, no, but how you accomplish it matters as much as if you accomplish it, just becomes like Charlie Brown parent noise, right? It's wah, 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 wah. These are my goals. And so you don't prepare managers to A, goal set, you know, in a realistic fashion, and prioritize how your team's doing it as much as if your team's doing it, then you wind up with the situations that we keep seeing in the news, right? Then you wind up with the situations that Professor Payne cites in the article. You wind up with challenge after challenge after challenge after challenge because those two messages are disconnected in the employee's head. And then they get into what behavioral ethics tells us happens all the time, right? They get into justification. They get into, peer pressure to hit the goal. They get into some of that ethical norming that we know happens inside organizations, and you wind up looking up 8, 10, 12 months down the road, and you don't recognize yourself because of the decisions that you've made.
In Professor Payne's article, she cites a list of the biggest business ethics scandals in the past 40 or 50 years. And in every one of them, there's a deep organizational aspect and a culture that has gone seriously off the rails. Payne notes this as a way to remove ethical failings from the individual. But my question is, isn't this a little bit more complicated than all that? I mean, to what degree are major organizational ethical failings the result of a death cycle where unethical individuals empower unethical management, and in turn, unethical management then rewards unethical individuals and perhaps even forces out the ethical ones who might otherwise raise their hand or try to put a stop to things?
Billy, you and I were having a conversation about this over Slack before we started recording the session. I think that's exactly right. It's, again, goes back to Matt's definition of culture. If culture is if the culture of an organization is the worst behavior that they're willing to tolerate, and the organization is willing to tolerate anything, right? Then you wind up with a culture where the people who stay are people who are willing to tolerate anything, right? They are people who are willing to put their head down and just do their job while, the world is falling apart around them. And that is the reason why, to me, the pressure pillar is one of the most interesting places to interrogate when you do a culture survey. And in particular, one of the things that we always like to see companies doing is looking demographically at where they are hearing pressure signals, right? What are the groups that are saying that they're getting more pressure, and what sources is that pressure coming from? And then what other data points can I triangulate to help me make sense of that particular piece of information? Can I look at where I'm getting concerns raised from? If I've got a group of people who are saying, yes, I regularly experience pressure, and I have no speak up information from that group, I got to get out there fast, right? Because that means that, this is the only signal I'm getting from this particular team, that there's something that is potentially awry with that, part of the organization. We also like to see crosses of that pressure data demographically with organizational justice faith. So how, do you believe that anything would happen if I raised a concern, and would that thing that happened be equal to, regardless of the role that the individual employee is in? We often cross it with speak up data from the survey itself. So to what extent is an employee from that group that's feeling pressure also comfortable raising their hand or actually has raised their hand, and who do they go to in those circumstances? But then there are other data sources you can cross too. If you're a manufacturing organization, do you have a group that's feeling a ton of pressure and you've got a lot of near misses? Or do you have no near misses from that particular group, and that means that nobody's comfortable telling you that there have been misses, right? Like, what are the signals that the data is giving you that you've got a situation where people are being, people's cheese keeps getting moved in a way that is leading them down a road we don't want them to go down.
Well, Erica, thanks again for joining us today to talk about these issues. As always, you add a tremendous amount of value to the conversation.
Oh, Bill, it's really my pleasure. Professor Payne's piece is excellent. For anybody who hasn't read it, I strongly recommend checking both this piece out and then the original work that she published 30 years ago. She was really one of the original voices in the ethics and compliance space. And so it's great to see her come back, and particularly to see her points marry so beautifully with the pressure data that we've been collecting for years.
To read Professor Payne's article, When Managers Set Unrealistic Expectations, Employees Cut Ethical Corners, visit the Harvard Business School Working Knowledge website at hbswk.hbs.edu. And to get a copy of Research Handbook on Organizational Integrity, visit Edward Elgar Publishing at elgar.com. That's E-ELGAR.com. And most of all, to read Ethisphere's 8 Pillars of an Ethical Culture, visit ethisphere.com/resources, where you'll find a host of additional reports, white papers, and more on how you can build and advance a culture of integrity within your organization. I'm Bill Coffin, and this has been the Ethicast. For more episodes, please visit the Ethisphere YouTube channel at youtube.com/ethisphere. And if this is your first time enjoying the show, please make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, remember, strong ethics is good business.